Well, he is Greek-American. He's a New Yorker.
It's a great American success story.
He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
He's got plenty of ideas on how to bring change.
Enlist the support of business leaders, elected officials.
Katsimatidis rubs shoulders with some of the most powerful people in the world.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now that's John Katsimatidis, a native New Yorker.
Mixing common sense thinking with New York sensibility. He's John Katsimatidis, owner of 77 WABC. And this is the Cats Roundtable on Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Everywhere around the world, they come to America.
Good morning, New York. This is the Cats Roundtable, New York edition, and we have one great show for you today. We have Jack Cittarelli. He is running for governor of New Jersey and says he can do things better. Coming back to New York, we have Bo Schnedley on a new show on WABC Radio. And he was Rush Limbaugh's number one guy and number two guy, and talks about getting the truth out on radio. And to give us the pulse of what's going on in America, we have Dick Morris. Dick Morris, what's going on in the world today?
Well, you won't believe this, and your listeners will rush to the store to have their radio checked because they'll think it's defective. But it's hard to believe this, but the Biden administration is seriously considering allocating $500 million to the Taliban as humanitarian foreign aid to the Afghan people. I'm not kidding.
You can't make this up. Are you serious?
I
mean, yes, well, is that in cash? I mean, I know President Obama sent $1 billion something to Iran. Are we now going to send $500 million to the Taliban?
That was greenback cash. This will be a check, but it's a government program. The budget, this year's federal budget calls for spending $500 million on humanitarian foreign aid for Afghanistan. And that, of course, was passed before the crazies took over. And Biden's people are now discussing among themselves whether they want to continue with that program or discontinue it now that the Taliban is in charge. And the liberals are saying, oh, this is a humanitarian catastrophe. This is a horrible thing. People's lives are disrupted. The country's in desperate shape, and we owe it to humanity to give this foreign aid to the Taliban.
That is a scoop, and I'm waiting to listen to your noontime show on Sunday on WABCRadio.com, 770 in the New York area, on the AM dial. And what will you be talking to about today at noontime?
Well, I think the other story that I'm pursuing is that a U.S. District Court judge in Texas has thrown out as illegal all of Biden's immigration programs, all of the things he's done. He has, for example, has banned deportation of criminals. They've struck that down. They've instructed ICE agents to catch and release illegal immigrants. They've struck that down. They've basically reversed everything Biden is doing on immigration. It's a stunning court decision. It'll go up on appeal, but I think the odds are it'll be affirmed. And you can take a red pencil and cross out all of the garbage Biden is doing on the border, because the court says that it's not an issue of constitutionality, but Congress demanded these programs, mandated it, and said, you shall do this. It's not discretionary. And he said that Biden is breaking the law by doing that stuff. Now, this will probably lead to a demand to include in the reconciliation package an explicit authorization of these policies. But I don't think that's ever going to pass, because the Democratic congressmen are going to be scared to death to vote for it. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
Well, Dick Morris, I look forward to listening to you Sunday at noontime on WABCRadio.com, 770 in New York City, on the AM dial. And thank you so much, Dick Morris, and we'll catch up again soon, and we'll be listening at noon.
Thank you, Kat.
Here we are today with Cindy Adams, a great friend, 41 years with the New York Post. She started when she was three, and a new 10-year contract with WABC Radio. And how are you, Cindy Adams?
First of all, I love you. That's all I can say. I'd be anywhere where you are. I'm on it, WABC, which you have now made number one. But I would be anywhere for you. I love you, John. I think you're brilliant.
Well, thank you so much, and I do love you, too. Now, you have a very special event going on Sunday night, and you are Showtime did a special documentary on your life. Tell us about it.
Well, Ron Howard, who you know is an Oscar-winning producer and director, and we have great respect for him. He had an idea. I knew nothing. Nobody came to me. Nobody asked me anything. He decided he wanted to do a documentary on me. Understand, at this point in life, everyone has a documentary. Even orthodontists, they have a documentary. It doesn't mean anything anymore. So he went to the New York Post. The New York Post would sell out anybody for a buck and a half. So they went everywhere, and they got all of my background, all of my history, all of my 500 front pages, and they gave it to Ron Howard. Then, 6 months later, they all came to me with this dossier that they had, and they said, now you have to say yes. And that's what when it started 3 years ago.
So there's a special documentary on Showtime. I understand it's a 4 2-hour segments?
It's four consecutive segments. They're 1 hour each. The first one starts Sunday night, at 8 o'clock on Showtime, and then four consecutive Sundays. And the difficulty for us, John, was not just doing it, but the last 2 years, you couldn't do anything. So where could a camera crew get me doing what I normally do? There's no gala. There's no red carpet. There's no backstage. There's no party. There's no gala, anything. So they had to make up the last segment with a little difficulty.
What was a part of your, give us one tip of what's going to happen in those 4 hour segments. Did you tell them the most embarrassing time of your life?
I think it's right now, but I'm not. No, I didn't do of that. But I told a lot of stories about people like my Robert De Niro going into an elevator with him in a Los Angeles, a Beverly Hills hotel, and a little old blonde lady about 5,000 years old doddering in. And she looks at him and she says, aren't you Dustin Hoffman? And he said, yes, ma'am, I am. And, you know, there are stories like that. There are stories where Imelda Marcos, the first lady of the Philippines, I flew to Manila and her husband, then President Ferdinand Marcos, gave a big party in my honor. Now, to fly to Manila is tiring. It's a lot of hours. And here is this gala party, 500 people. I fell asleep on the president's shoulder during the party. I mean, there are stories that go on endlessly.
Did you inherit the 4,000 pairs of shoes?
No, she had 3,000, and it's a different size. But if otherwise, I would have certainly tried to get it. I would also try to have gotten some of her jewelry. Leona Helmsley, you should pardon the expression, she had a conversation with me one day, and she said, what is it? Why are they putting Imelda Marcos on trial? I have this in the documentary. And I said, because she had mathematical Alzheimer's. So she says, what does that mean? I said, she can't remember where she mislaid $800 million. So she said, only 800 million. She said, I have more. There's a lot of this stuff that's in the documentary that nobody else knows, just me. I
look forward to it. I look forward to watching, every Sunday night on Showtime at 8 o'clock?
That's correct, and it starts this Sunday at 8 o'clock on Showtime.
Well, I look forward to it, and for all those people listening to this, Cindy Adams is on every Sunday at 1 o'clock on WABCRadio.com and worldwide, and also 770 on the AM dial in the New York area. Cindy Adams, God bless you. I love you. Make sure you fulfill your 10-year contract, and I'll give you a 10-year option besides.
Thank you, honey. I love you today.
Love you, too. With us today is Mr. Travis Mills. He was a staff sergeant at the 82nd Airborne, and he was critically injured by an IED, and he's a patriot. He loves America, but right now he's mad as hell at what's going on. Travis, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, and good morning.
Give us a lowdown. I mean, you were you served in Afghanistan. You lost your legs. You worked hard for America, and you love America. Is it correct to say you're mad as hell and you can't take it anymore? What's going on?
Well, I tell you what, I served in three tours. I lost both legs and both arms. I'm actually a quadruple amputee. And, you know, I think it's the right decision to get out of Afghanistan, but I also think that strategically it's the most ridiculous thing they could have done. And shutting down Bagram and Kandahar air bases, where they actually have runways and they can take all the planes and get people out, shutting those down first and then trying to get out of a small airport in Kabul is the most ridiculous thing ever. So, yeah, you can say I'm a little bit irritated, but I think my main focus is making sure that the service members know that fought overseas, that it wasn't all for nothing. We did a good job. We did a lot of great things, and that they should be proud of their service, regardless of if Afghanistan's government could stand on its own or not.
Well, there's a lot of people mad as hell, and because the way it happened, I understand the way President Trump had set it up originally was that they're going to evacuate civilians, and then they're going to take all the equipment out. And then after all that's done, then they're going to reduce troops. But I guess it didn't happen that way, did it?
No, it did not. And I think I saw a report, and it could be all hearsay, but I saw a report where the administration was thinking they might have to actually drop bombs on our own equipment that we left there. So I don't understand it. I don't get it. And it makes absolutely no sense to me or my fellow brothers in arms.
Travis, what are you doing now? I understand that you have formed a foundation and you wrote a book. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. I wrote a book called Tough As They Come. It's a New York Times bestseller. Very proud of that. And I decided to start a nonprofit to give back to those who sacrificed so much. One thing that we do is bring out combat and service-connected injured veterans with physical injuries. We bring them and their families to this nice estate that we rehabbed in Maine, where I live at, in this great state of Maine. And we show them that they can do anything they want to do. They want to kayak. They want to snowboard. They want to mountain bike. We will set them up and show them they can do everything that they want and to not live life on the sidelines. My biggest thing to make sure that they know their sacrifices are appreciated, respected, and we're going to make them understand that they don't live life on the sidelines. My slogan is never give up, never quit. And we also have a post-traumatic stress program that's one of the top in the nations that we're a part of called Warrior Path. But, you know, my website, TravisMillsFoundation.org, anybody wants to get involved, I would encourage that. And, you know, we're just here because people sacrificed like I did and so much more. And we want them to know it wasn't all for nothing. You can still be an active member in your family and society and to live out my slogan of never give up and never quit.
Travis Mills, thank you for your service. Thank you for everything you do. And thank you for what you're doing for the American soldiers that are not as lucky as you to be right now and have your mind set in one particular spot. And you know where you're at. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been very fortunate with a strong mindset. I have a wonderful wife for 13 years. My son and my daughter are right there pushing me forward every day. So I understand the price I could have paid in Afghanistan. But I also want all the service members out there to know that it wasn't all for nothing and to be proud of what they did and know they're supported and thanked and loved for their service.
Give us your website one more time.
TravisMillsFoundation.org. Please check it out. Hit me up on Instagram and Twitter at SSG Travis Mills. And you guys are awesome. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. This is the Cats Roundtable. We'll be right back.
You're a great American. You're a classic example of the people who built this country.
He's got plenty of ideas on how to bring change.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
This is the Cats Roundtable on Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's John Catsimatidis.
Today, WABC is announcing that we have new talent and a new great person on WABC Radio, and he's Bo Schnerdly or James Golden. And my announcer says, do you want both people on the phone? I said, they are the same person. He was Rush Limbaugh's number two guy, and he is taking over the airwaves between 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock on WABC Radio worldwide. And good morning, oh, good afternoon, Bo. How are you?
I am great, John, and I am full of gratitude to you and to this wonderful radio station that I love, that has been such an amazing part of my life. And so I'm just feeling so exuberant, and thank you.
Well, let me tell you something. The mission of WABC Radio and the mission of my mission and your mission is to make sure our country survives and we tell the truth. The utmost important is just tell the truth to the American people and let them know what's going on in our country. And I worry not about me and you. I worry about our children and our grandchildren to come and make a difference in our world. What say you? We're such a big mess right now.
Here's what I say, John. I say the American dream has to live on. And can you imagine? We can imagine what the world would have been like if America and the allied nations hadn't prevailed almost 70 years ago now. We saw what the impulses of the world leaders were. And some of the world leaders today still have those same impulses. So America stands in the way of those who would drive humanity into the abyss. That is part of what America is. But America, and you are the living example of this, John, you have lived this. You have lived the opportunity that America can create for people that are willing to step up to the plate. That's what your whole life has been about. And so we have to continue the America that is the land of opportunity. At the same time, we have to remember that America is still a young nation. When you compare America and our history to the history of the world, we are still the new kid on the block. But what we have to ensure is that this beautiful, wonderful nation, America, lives on for generations to come so that your children, your grandchildren, my daughter, that they can have the kind of country that we have, where they can prosper, where they can feel secure in their own, within the borders of this country. We have so much work to do, but we have also been blessed, and we have to also remember to be grateful for what this country is. And you're right. Tell the truth. Now, John, the other thing, the other mission, WABC is the most iconic radio station in the world. And I am so extremely happy that you are making the luster on WABC what it should be. I call it the crown jewel of American radio. WABC is the crown jewel of radio in the world. And thank God, John, that you are bringing it back to where it should be.
Well, welcome home to WABC, the home of your old boss, Rush Limbaugh, that was working at WABC with you for 25 years. Welcome home. Do you miss Rush?
Of course. Every single day, I'm still grieving for him, as of all of us on the staff are. We miss him. It is a void. And I see so many people comment on social media, oh, I wonder what Rush would say about this. Oh, this is, we need Rush. And yes, we do. But we had Rush for 33 years on the air. And I tell you what, he left us a way of thinking about things. And so part of keeping Rush's legacy alive is for us to just kind of remember what his take was on America and on this beautiful country that we live in, and to continue that legacy, to continue to be optimistic and to continue to have faith, not just in God, but in freedom, in family, and faith that the right thing will ultimately happen, even when things look so chaotic and it looks like we're headed toward the abyss. We just have to keep the faith. And I miss him every day.
We both came from the poor side of town, and the world has been good to you. The world has been good to me. And it's our turn to make sure the world is good for our children and our grandchildren. And we have to make a difference because America is under attack right now. And we have to just make sure that it's under attack from the Asian corner. It's under attack from the Russian and OPEC corner. It's under attack from Central America coming up through our Texas and Arizona borders. And the American people have to realize that people are just coming in. I mean, from the borders, they're bringing in fentanyl. They're bringing in drugs to dumb down our kids. and I'm really emotional about that. They're dumbing down our kids with all these drugs, and the Chinese are adding the fentanyl to those drugs, killing our kids. And the American people have to wake up and say, holy cow, we're under attack, and we have to take action to make sure that we keep our country safe.
Absolutely. And John, we're under attack from within. We're under attack from the academic elite in this country who don't like this country. We're under attack from leftist organizations who prefer Marxism to capitalism and who are now very openly stating that they don't believe in the kind of system in America. And I'm not talking about crony capitalism. I'm talking about market-based capitalism that can rise, make the tide rise for everyone in terms of prosperity. They don't believe in any of those things. We're under attack from our cultural institutions, from some of the celebrity class who don't understand America, who've never taken the time to study what is unique about America, but instead use their wealth and their fame that they gain from being in America to attack it every day. So, yeah, America is under attack, but America has so many patriots. America has so many people still that understand how unique and how good and wonderful not just the country are, but how good overall the American people are. We are the most giving people in the world. And so, John, yeah, we are on the front lines, and we have to repel these attacks, not just from the foreign nations, not just from people that are invading our borders and invading our economic borders, but also those that are invading us culturally from within.
Well, we're looking forward. WABC, our audience, is looking forward to listening to you every day between 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock on WABCradio.com, 770 on the AM dial, worldwide out of WABC. And God bless you. Also on Saturday mornings between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock on WABCradio.com and on 770 on our dial. And look forward to working with you every day. God bless you and God bless America.
And God bless you, John. Thank you so much.
Lydia Serrano here with Judge Weinberg as well as Ed Cox. And we have a great lineup for you coming up. Do we have Jack Chitarelli on the line? And we also have Governor David Patterson on the line. Now, Jack Chitarelli is a businessman who served in the New Jersey General Assembly from 2011 to 2018. He will face Phil Murphy, the Democratic incumbent. And it's one of only two governor races in the nation in November. Welcome, Jack Chitarelli.
Hey, Lydia. Great to be with you once again.
And Governor Patterson, you're on the line as well.
Hello, Jack. Nice to meet you.
Same here, David.
So what, Jack Chitarelli, what is the biggest hurdle you think, the biggest issue now facing New Jersey residents?
Certainly taxes, taxes, and taxes, Lydia. This is a governor that has raised the personal income tax in 3.5 years in office, raised the personal income tax, raised the business tax, raised property taxes. On top of significant gas tax increases, he's increased tolls. He borrowed $4.5 billion that we didn't need to, that we'll be paying back over the next 12 to 15 years, and increased spending in the budget by 30%, $11 billion in less than 4 years' time. He's mortgaged our future, and as we all know, New Jerseyans face the largest tax burden in the country.
And you know what that means for a small business, because you built up one, didn't you, Jack?
I did. And, you know, there was particularly salt rubbed in the wound this past week when the governor put in place a $250 million payroll tax increase to replenish our depleted unemployment trust fund. Why is the trust fund depleted? Because he continues to hand out unemployment benefits without any checkpoints whatsoever. And so he's sitting on billions in federal CARES Act relief funds and American Rescue Act funds that he's allowed by law to use to replenish the unemployment trust fund. Why in the world, after everything small business has been through, why would you hit him with a $250 million payroll tax increase? Only in Phil Murphy's world.
We're getting taxed out of here. I just don't even understand. Everybody is fleeing the tri-state area because we just can't afford to live here anymore. The tolls alone are ridiculous.
Our property taxes in New Jersey now exceed $9,100 a year. And a recent study done by a national CPA journal said that the average New Jerseyan is paying more than $900,000 a year, $900,000 in taxes over their lifetime. And it's dead last in the nation. So even Massachusetts, which came in 49th place, was $100,000 better than New Jersey.
All right. Jack, it's Richard Weinberg. How are you?
Hello, Richard.
Just one important question. What's your vision as governor of New Jersey?
My vision is to make New Jersey a better place and a more affordable place for all citizens and businesses. And as an MBA CPA and two-time business owner, I know exactly what we need to do to lower our property taxes. We need a new school funding formula. And I know exactly what we need to do to our tax code to make New Jersey a much more attractive place to do business.
David, Ed Cox here. And I know you did some really special things with the New York budget to make sure you got the budget you wanted. What kind of advice would you give to a Governor Citarelli?
Jack, I think that if you're running for governor right now, strangely enough, I mean, I was the chair of the Democratic Party and I was governor, but I'm going to be a Republican consultant for 45 seconds and give you some advice. And here's my advice. This situation in Afghanistan is such a fiasco that it is going to germinate down to the local levels in our society. And I think that you are going to have to challenge in this race why this evacuation was occurring in Afghanistan, why, if it was going to occur, it wasn't planned, and why the Democratic Party and most Democrats around the country won't apologize for it. The first thing I would have done if I made such a mess as I did, and I made a couple when I was governor, is I got up and I admitted to it. So I think that brazen honesty that you would be asking for could serve you well in this race. There's no charge for my consultancy.
Well, David, listen, no disagreement here. I mean, what's going on at our southern border? What's going on with inflation? What's going on over in Afghanistan? I agree with you. All that does trickle down and influence people's attitudes with regard to the vote. But I'll tell you, the next quarterly tax bill for anyone's home is on people's minds first and foremost. But you're right. It's all the above. And we'll continue to talk about these issues.
Thank you for being with us for the Cats Roundtable Local Edition, the number one show on Sunday mornings in New York. Keep listening to us for the Cats Roundtable National Edition between 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock. So we'll be back to you in a few minutes after the news.
Well, he is Greek-American. He's a New Yorker.
It's a great American success story.
He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
He's got plenty of ideas on how to bring change.
Enlist the support of business leaders, elected officials.
Katsimatidis rubs shoulders with some of the most powerful people in the world.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now that's John Katsimatidis, a native New Yorker.
Mixing common sense thinking with New York sensibility. He's John Katsimatidis, owner of 77 WABC. And this is the Cats Roundtable on Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Everywhere around the world, they come to America.
Good morning, America. This is the national edition of the Cats Roundtable. John Katsimatidis here. We have one great show for you today. We have Dr. Peter Michalos to give everybody an update. What's going on with the COVID virus and the solutions? The greatest economist of all time, Larry Kudlow, to give us the truth about the economy. John Solomon, an analyst, will give us the real news of what's going on in Afghanistan. Oliver North, and again, he is concerned for America. And to start off, we have Nigel Farage, a British political activist, a politician, a member of parliament, and the father of Brexit. Good morning, Nigel. How are you this morning?
John, good morning. But what a shocking week it's been, hasn't it? It really, really has. I can scarcely believe what Biden did. I can scarcely believe the way he treated his allies and friends in the world. And I fear we're going to suffer some very bad long-term consequences from the Taliban taking Afghanistan the way they have.
Did he notify Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, at all in Great Britain?
No, he did not. You know, for over 100 years, in virtually every single conflict, we've been side by side, the British and the Americans. You know, you're obviously far bigger than us, but we're still a very important supporter and ally of America's. We weren't consulted. NATO wasn't consulted. And indeed, Joe Biden did not ring any world leader, speak to any world leader until 48 hours after the fall of Kabul. And that at a time when there were thousands of British nationals, American nationals, other European nationals, trapped, horrified, terrified, not knowing what was going on. And this is the most complete failure of leadership on the international stage I've seen in my lifetime.
Nobody could really understand in our country what happened. I mean, I'm sure he got intelligence from the CIA, is claiming they told them that it would be a problem. And I'm sure the military told them the same thing. Has anybody on your end of the continent figured out what happened in our end of the continent?
Well, I think people just think that it was perhaps wishful thinking on Mr. Biden's part. Or, alternatively, you know, he's just not fit to make these judgments. And that may sound like a harsh assessment, but I'm beginning to wonder whether it's true. I just don't think he's up to this. I mean, think about this. Over the last 20 years, America has spent between $1 and $2 trillion on the Afghanistan campaign. By walking out, letting the Taliban have it, he's effectively just given some of the largest lithium deposits in the world to the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, whether we look at this in terms of strategy, whether we look at this in terms of geopolitics, whether we look at this in terms of the renewed risk of international jihadi terrorism, at every single twist and turn, this was an appalling decision. And none of us can quite know what intelligence he was given. But the worst of all, perhaps, is to vacate and not to make any contingency plans for thousands of your own people. You know, up to 15,000 Americans trapped in Afghanistan and a president who appears not to care less about them. I mean, that is extraordinary.
That's the number one priority, is get our civilians out. Get all the civilians out. Then the second priority was to destroy any secured equipment that should not fall into the wrong hands. And then if they want to leave, then they leave. But they didn't do any of it. I mean, is the Department of Defense, you think our guys at Department of Defense are doing wrong?
I mean, somebody has to bear responsibility for the mess we're in. And all we can do as we speak, John, is to hope and pray that those civilians get out of that airport. But the scenes there are looking increasingly tense and dangerous. It just beggars belief that you can do this and not think about your own citizens. It is quite extraordinary. As I say, I've never seen anything like it. And I think Biden's popularity will collapse. And I think questions will start to be asked, big questions will start to be asked, about whether this man is fit to be president of America and leader of the free world.
Well, America, we've been saying lately, I mean, we gave him a chance when he got elected. We were praying for his success. But lately, you know, America is under attack by what's happening in the China area, Asia area, what's happening with the pipelines between Russia and OPEC. What's happening with the borders? I mean, it's just crazy. I understand that the Brits are sending their troops in to take out the British citizens. Is that true?
Yes, we have. We've sent 1,000 soldiers in to guard the perimeter. Not as many as America, but we had sort of 4,000 to 5,000 British people there. But also, John, bear this in mind, that over 20 years, both of our armies and services needed a lot of help from Afghan interpreters, all right? And again, there's been no consideration given to them at all, and they are being hunted down by the Taliban and being murdered in the streets. That is what is going on in Afghanistan right now. It is horrific. It is horrendous. And the only way, you know, as you say, guarantee the right of civilians, and if they were going to withdraw, I mean, Trump tried to do this deal with the Taliban where he said, look, we'll withdraw, you know, provided you come to a full peace agreement. And for Biden to say, oh, well, I left because Trump had said we were going to. Well, he's broken everything else Trump did. The point about the Trump withdrawal is it was conditional on how the Taliban behaved, and they've broken every one of those rules.
What is scheduled to get at least the British civilians out?
Well, we have Royal Air Force planes going in. We are slowly but surely getting our people out. But, you know, there are very, very large numbers of people from all different nations stuck at that airport. And, you know, the fear is that the Taliban are literally just a few hundred yards away. So, you know, one just hopes that we can get everybody out before something, you know, really bad develops. It's going to be a very, very, very tense week to 10 days before we find out the conclusion of this. But overall, Taliban are back in charge. We've turned the clock back 20 years. Arguably, in terms of the lives of women and others, we've gone back to the dark ages. And here's the other extraordinary thing. The Taliban now have billions of pounds worth of U.S. military equipment. All that military equipment that was sent to help the Afghan army, that too is now in the hands of the jihadis. How could we as a country ever trust America with anything if Joe Biden was in charge? And I'm not even sure that NATO, which has been around as a guarantor of peace against the Soviet Union and others, I'm not even sure NATO can survive what Biden's done. It is quite extraordinary. America is back, is what Biden said. They cheered him at the G7. Here was this wonderful new leader, and actually he's done more damage than any president in modern times.
I agree with you 100%. We have another minute or so. Anything else you want to tell the American people?
Yeah, get rid of Biden.
Well, if they get rid of Biden, we come up with Kamala. I mean, and none of us know much about Kamala Harris, the vice president.
No, that's true. That's true. She's an unknown quantity, but I've also noticed that her rankings and ratings in the polls are going down as well. So, you know, the Democrats are in. They're making a real mess of everything, border, the southern border, you name it. And all I can say to people is the midterms at least give an opportunity that might just stop them doing more damage. So get ready for the midterms. Only the democratic process can correct this total failure of leadership.
Nigel Farage, thank you so much. And thank you for everything you do for Great Britain and what you do for the whole world by telling the truth. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story with common sense thinking. It's the Cat's Roundtable.
Good morning, America. This is the Cat's Roundtable. John Katzmann is here. It's Sunday morning. And Lydia, I understand we have a special guest.
That's right. We have Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. He's a combat decorated U.S. Marine, a TV host, a military historian, a best-selling author. And I think he knows a little something about national security. Welcome, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North.
Great to be with you all again. And also a person way too familiar with a place called Afghanistan. Mm.
Tell us, what the heck is going on and who calls the shots?
That's a big question. Apparently, according to what he said yesterday, the commander-in-chief said the buck stops with him. And if that's true, okay, then we're in deep, serious trouble. And so are tens of thousands of people trying to get out of Afghanistan right now. I mean, the problem was, and he described it very accurately, except that he was describing the wrong thing. I mean, what happened over there was a total failure of preparation for the kinds of things that are now happening right in front of our eyes. And I've spent the better part of the last 72 hours on the phone with people who I know who are trying to get out. Some of them are Americans. Many of them are Afghans who helped us. And they have no way of getting through the cordon that has been established by the Taliban. When Mr. Biden said in his remarks that, quote, "This happened a lot faster than we thought it would." That there's a hint in right there in all of that. It unfolded faster than we expected, is the way he put it. Mm. So what's unfolded? A Taliban seizure of the country. Did they really expect that going all the way back to when these conversations with the Taliban began back in the last administration? Did he do anything at all in preparation? Remember, I'm not sure if he remembers, but we know that he came to office in January. The election was in November. He came to office in January. What transpired between January and what's now transpiring now in conversations with the Taliban? Treating them like they were a legitimate force to be reckoned with, I guess. which quite frankly is beyond what I thought would be a wise thing to do way back when it started in the last administration. But in any event, what did they do to prepare? Apparently, what they started to do was to shut down every U.S. base and get the hell out of Dodge, forgetting that perhaps there are probably in round numbers over 150,000 people who had been working with us closely on the Afghan government. Some of them were military, some of them were police, some of them were intelligence, some of them were medics, some of them were running hospitals, some of them were pumping out porta-potties, for crying out loud, all over the base for 20 years, all over the place for 20 years. And they were just going to walk out and leave him? And I have to give Mike Waltz, who is a congressman from the 6th District of Florida, a lot of credit, because he and I first met on the battlefield over there when he was a special forces officer. And he and I have stayed close. And so when all this balloon first started to come apart over a month ago, he and I had some conversations about, how about the TERPs? Here's my list of 19 TERPs that I used, Ollie North, as a Fox News correspondent and covering the war. And what's being done to get them out? And, of course, I don't know if you've heard Mike on Fox over the course of the last several days, but Mike has described what happened to his TERP once they found out who he was. Mm. And the Taliban have a great network of intelligence operatives, as almost all good big terrorist organizations do. And what they found him. They went to his place, found his documents, brought him back to his home, and beheaded him in front of his wife and children.
Oh, my God.
And so where we are, John, is we're now in a situation where there are literally tens of thousands, if not over 100,000, people in that same predicament and absolutely no capacity for bringing it out. Now, we'll commit news right now. In the Milley Austin press conference, which is a joke in many respects, certainly the way the Secretary of Defense presented it. I mean, you and I have been around long enough to see lots of Secretaries of Defense give lots of briefings. That was terrible. And Milley was not much better. And he gave away a little secret in the middle of it. He acknowledged that they're no longer able to use the ATC system for instrument landings. He said that right in the, I'm paraphrasing it, but you go back and you play that little sound bite. It's rolled right into a, well, we've got some challenges here, you know. Some of it's the weather and some of it's crowds of people. And he lodges that right in the midst of that. What that means is, in aircraft, in pilot parlance, in airplane parlance, it means that you can no longer have a half-mile or a one-mile separation between aircraft coming in from Turkey and UAE and some flying all the way from the States. You can't do it with a half-mile separation. You now have to have visual recognition, which means miles of separation and in altitude and in distance, and which delays everything, both coming and going, out of the country, into the country and out of the country.
Well, who's the general in charge of Afghanistan right now?
Well,
or was?
No. Well, I mean, we've got 7,000, I guess, in round numbers right now. They said 6,500, I think, in the press conference. But we'll have around 7,000. And one of the things that's got to change, for example, he explained why they gave up the best air base in the country. Because they didn't have enough people to defend Bagram and the embassy. Well, the answer to that is get more people, get more things. Get more airplanes. Get whatever the hell you need to do it, but don't give up the best air base in the country. And the second best air base in the country was down in Helmand province, and that was a place called Leatherneck Bastion. And Lashkar Gah and Mazar-e-Sharif and Jalalabad all had American-built bases, and all the Americans pulled out, took a lot of their gear with them, particularly communications equipment, in the middle of the night. What a terrible, terrible way to do it. And finally, let me just make the observation. I've made it several times as I've done these TV over the course of the last several days. When the president of the United States accuses a foreign army who has allied with us of being unwilling to fight, first of all, he lied. Okay, since 2014, when the Afghan army went to the field and began the process of we'll come in and we'll take over this base, and the advisors would stay with him. Since 2014 till right now, over 66,000 Afghan troops and police officers and security people have been murdered, killed in action. And there's over 50,000 of them who've been hurt or wounded. I mean, wouldn't fight. Dear Lord, I was made two trips to the Vietnam War. We didn't lose that many people in the whole Vietnam War. And these guys have actually been fighting in the field since 2014. Now, what an incredible insult. Now, he can say what he wants about Ghani, but Ghani fled the country because he knew he was on the target list. As far as I know, right now, Abdullah is still, the vice president, is still in country. There are partisan groups already forming around the country. Who's going to be around to support them? And I have had a little experience with that, as we know, when I was a little bit younger. Mm-hmm. But the partisan groups are made up of little cadre of usually guys from the special forces, and I knew many of those guys. I went on operations with those guys, and MARSOC units and Army Special Forces units and Navy SEALs ran those kinds of operations all the time, accompanying those special operations troops of the Afghan government.
Colonel, what can we do now?
Pray. And I'm not joking. We need to pray for those guys on the ground. We need to pray for our country with the kind of leadership we've got.
What are you hearing from the people that you know who you want to hear from?
Well, the guys who are talking to me from Afghanistan are desperate. I mean, they'll call me up with a name and say, here's where he is. Here's his phone number. We have no way of getting this guy through the perimeter that the Afghans have established around the airfield.
How many troops do we still have in the ground, you think?
It looks somewhere in the neighborhood, if you believe what Millie and Austin were saying, they've got, of the 7,000 that they're allowed to get, which would include the original cadre that was there, they've got almost all of them. Unfortunately, they don't have all the equipment they need, because clearly, if the air traffic control system, the United States Air Force has an entire unit that does this kind of thing. They open up airfields and they control aircraft. And why that isn't working, I don't know yet. But I will by the end of the night, I'm sure.
This is a breakdown of a. I mean, if you can't fight the Taliban, who are you going to fight? The Chinese? Are you going to fight the Russians?
Well, at least we'll have established that we've got really good social justice warriors. Remember that, and they've been taught now about, you know, critical race theory, and they've been caught talk about gender analysis and all this other garbage. But God help us if this is what's happening to our military. We're, in fact, I think the last time you and I talked, one of the things that's happening in our military today is recruiting is way down. That we're losing really good, experienced junior officers and senior NCOs because they're getting out. And once you've lost the cohesion of those units, who are now supposed to look behind their backs because, by the way, if the guy that's got my back is not my color, then things could go upside down very quickly, right? That's the kind of thing that damages the military as much as an embarrassment like this. This is far worse in many respects because it's damaging to the credibility of the United States of America. If you're a Taiwanese soldier today wondering, will the Americans really honor the treaty that they've got with us? If you're a South Korean and you're looking across the border and you remember back to June 25th, 1950, are you thinking, will the Americans really fight this time? I mean, if anywhere in the world. Our credibility is smashed by this. That's why I say, in many respects, it's as bad as what happened on the 30th of April, 1975, in Saigon. This is the Biden moment. Is Saigon. This is it.
Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, thank you so much for everything you've done for our country. And
God bless you,
continue
buddy.
To do
pray
it.
For our country.
And
pray for our soldiers and Marines.
I'm praying because I know this is a bad situation. And your new book?
Yeah, tell us, please, about your new book, Colonel.
Well, it's We Didn't Fight for Socialism. And I'll tell you, it's flying off the shelves because this is the 500 veterans that we interviewed. Here's what they're saying about the crowd that's running this country right now. And these are guys who, when they looked at it, Biden hadn't even come into office yet. They knew what was going to come if he got there. And this is these guys who are professionals. Some of them served in the Vietnam War. Some of them served in this war. And these are bright, smart, tough young Americans. And they're looking at it and they say, we didn't fight for socialism. Many of them are calling back up to David Koch and I and saying, hey, we didn't fight to lose either as a consequence of what this is. So it's a great read about, and it's a primer on what we the people need to do to fix it. And of course, what we need to do to fix it first is get the House of Representatives back in the other party's hands. And number two, get the Senate. And number three, remember, there's going to be a presidential election in 2024.
Again, the Colonel's book, We Didn't Fight for Socialism. Where can we get your book? And we all know when you go woke, you go weak. So this is
go it's Amazon. You can get it all anywhere. You go to olivernorth.com and you can order it right there.
Thank you, Colonel. And let's go to a break.
Here's the man who is New York, exploring the truth, telling both sides with common sense thinking. Here's John Catsimatidis on Talk Radio 77 WABC. This is the Cats Roundtable.
Good morning, America. This is the Cats Roundtable. John Catsimatidis here. It's Sunday morning.
We have a John Solomon on the line with us of JustTheNews.com. He's an American journalist. He is as investigative a journalist as it gets. If there's breaking news, John Solomon is on it. John Solomon, welcome. Again, it's JustTheNews.com. What you got for us, John Solomon?
Well, it wasn't a busy day at all. Just the president talking about Afghanistan and Al-Qaeda and watchdogs raising concerns. It's been a crazy day in Washington. And whoever said news was quiet in August did not go through an August in Washington. The president's news conference is the big news right at this moment. We have him talking, clarifying, because there's been some doubt in people's minds. Are they really committed to getting all the Americans out? Because there have been some unusual answers by his team. The president unequivocally said, any American who wants to come home, we will get you home. They don't have a plan how they're going to do that yet, but they do have finally made a commitment 6 days after they left a lot of ambiguity about that. He said some other things that other people are scratching their head about. Joe Biden said Al-Qaeda is gone in Afghanistan. That's not what most intelligence people are telling me, nor the recent warnings that the Homeland Security Department issued. Al-Qaeda does have a presence in Afghanistan and in Yemen, and it seems to have been activating more. So the president had a so-so performance, but at least made one thing clear. If you're an American in Afghanistan, we're going to try to find a way to get you home.
John, it's Richard Weinberg. How are you?
Hey, Richard. Good to see you. Yes.
Good. You as well. This is my concern. They say if you want to get out, well, how do they know with people remote from Kabul that they can get to the airport? What kind of pathways have we done to secure passage so people can get from one place to the other and be admitted onto the planes?
It is a real problem. And, you know, one of the things we learned in the last couple of days is there have been more Afghans and foreigners on the exit flights than there have been Americans. I think part of the problem is because they haven't been able to identify and get to all the Americans. They withdrew the Bagram Air Base, and they started the withdrawal, and they allowed the Taliban to advance without doing the basic homework of where are all of our people and where should we get them to go that's safe. And almost every expert I've talked to in the last 2 days said the key should have been telling people in small groups starting back in April, get the Bagram, we're getting you out, get the Bagram, because we had this amazing airfield completely secured with all of the capabilities to repel any attack, and we gave that away, and now we're trying to do it out of a commercial airport that has a very bad security posture. And I think the biggest sign that they haven't done their homework, they didn't have a plan, they don't know where the Americans are.
Well, that's just an awful situation. This makes it thousands of times worse than the situation we had in 1979 in Iran when they seized the embassy.
You're 100% right. And the Taliban has great, listen, Taliban has control of the phone system. They can monitor phone calls now. They're getting help from China and Russia by all intelligence accounts that I've talked to. There is a tremendous amount of capability of the Taliban to intercept our people, make them disappear without us knowing. I hope that doesn't happen. We pray that doesn't happen. But the reality is, we created an extraordinary and unnecessary complication to this exit strategy. On the site this morning, we interviewed the person that developed Donald Trump's plan for getting out of Afghanistan. He walked through every piece of the plan. They thought about how they were going to come up with the number of Americans where they were, how they were going to identify the Afghans and figure out where they are, how they were going to make sure that all the prisoners at the Bagram Air Base would never get released and commit terrorism again. And all of that was rejected by the Biden administration.
John, Ed Cox here. I don't see how he could say that he did not know of any complaints from any of our allies after you heard from after you hear from Merkel.
I guess if you don't pick up the phone, you can claim ignorance.
Well, either he's lying or he's ignorant, and the president should not be ignorant. And NATO, NATO's really at risk here. Why should they follow the United States again? After 9/11, they declared Article 5. They put in place. They're coming to our defense. They go into Afghanistan with us, and then we bug out on them at the end. And
ripples from that communication too. That's one of the things that I've talked to some of the European allies the last couple of days. The lack of communication. Joe Biden just did things without communicating. You know, if you remember, everyone was with Joe Biden at the G7. He was like, oh, America's back. What a cool group. That entire group that was with Joe Biden, they are not happy with him right now.
Guys, John Katsimatidis, I interviewed Nigel Farage from the UK, the father of Brexit. And the Brits are as mad as hell, and they can't take it anymore because they could not get a return call from the White House. The White House did not keep them informed, and that broadcast will show on our Sunday show. And it said they never called the Brits. They're our closest ally. They never called any of the NATO countries. I mean, you can't make this up. I mean, this is very, very sad. What's going on?
Yeah. And John, I'm going to have an exclusive tomorrow morning to go just into this idea of how bad the planning was. There was no planning at all. I got several of the internal memos today from the Customs and Border Patrol laying out how they're doing the processing of Afghan refugees. And the memos irrefutably say, listen, because of the way this rolled out, most people didn't have time to get their papers. We don't know who we're bringing into Dulles International Airport. We're going to have to do extra screening. We're going to have to use biometrics. And here's a quote from one of the people who's doing screening right now. So this is a frontline CPB screener. Direct quote from him. Most are leaving Afghanistan in a hurry without travel papers, passports, or birth certificates. We're flying blind in a proverbial rainstorm with a lot of heavy fog, too. We don't know at first blush if someone we're processing is the seventh cousin of bin Laden or a good Samaritan. It's going to be a tedious job. That's why the lack of planning has consequences. Now we're processing people, and they didn't even have time to bring their papers with them.
John, it sounds like our southern border.
It does, yes.
And all these airplanes that are landing, and I was listening to Lydia's show before, all these planes that are landing at Westchester Airport in the middle of the night. Who are these people coming in?
We don't know because the administration won't tell us where they're bringing immigrants. We do know all Afghan refugees are coming in through Dulles. That's one thing we've been able to confirm here in Washington. That's the only processing point into the country right now. But all the other ones are probably border migrants, and we have no visibility because the administration won't tell the American people where they're sending those migrants.
Well, it's very, very sad times, and it's Americans don't know if they should zig or zag.
Well, it's a terrible national security threat for us internally in the United States, but it also sends a signal to all our allies that we are not dependable allies. You cannot count on us. We're going to bug out. We're going to run. We're not going to protect the people with us. And that's very, very dangerous. You have India has to worry about Pakistan. You have the Israelis has to worry about Iran and the Hezbollah surrogates. You have, at a certain time, you're going to have struggles to try to keep Russian and Iranian and Chinese influence out of that country. And how do you do that now? You don't have a place where you can get real intelligence. Russia's turned down our requests for intelligence centers.
It says it better than anyone I've heard. It's just one giant bowl of disaster. And it has not years of consequences, but decades of consequences.
Judge Weinberg, I have a question for you. This is Lydia Serrani, by the way, everybody. Is this not grounds for impeachment at this point?
Well, as we all know through the Trump situation and the Clinton situation, fundamentally the question of impeachment is a political question. And if somebody is not enforcing the laws of the United States, yes, that would be legal grounds for impeachment. Likewise, the southern border.
You end up, but Judge, you end up with Kamala Harris, who might be substantially worse. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows Kamala Harris at all.
I think we have a 3.5-year horror story ahead of us, and it's going to play out, and we can't get it under control. When Secretary Pompeo was on the air last week, we asked him the question, what advice would you give? And he said he didn't have enough information because he's not on the inside, and I respect that conclusion. But it seems to me the basic advice is you have to secure your people to get them out. You have to destroy the weaponry and the confidential secret information. And then, and only then, do you take your troops out. It seems to me if we're going to have a pathway to get our folks safely home, which is the obligation of this administration and this president, if we're going to do that, we may have to send more troops in to secure pathways. And I don't know that they have the courage to do that.
Ed Cox, you had a brilliant observation when you were watching the press conference with Kirby. And I was telling you off mic, but I'll say it now. I have sources there at the White House in the press corps. There is scuttle bugs going around that the reason there was such a delay with them coming out is that Kamala Harris didn't want to come out with Joe Biden. That's why she's been silent for the past 6 days. And you could see her just kind of standing there looking straight across. And you had a great observation about Kirby.
Yes. Yes.
So his, you go ahead. Say it.
I have. Well, I've never seen that kind of a major press conference where the president just has those people silently standing there to give him that kind of support. It shows he's weak. He can't do it on his own. It was not a good picture for him.
They were trying to do a show of solidarity, I think.
Yeah.
John Solomon, will anybody stand up in Washington from the military and say this is wrong and we gave the right advice and nobody listened?
You know, I think you're going to see someone's going to have to go right soon. This is the classic Washington game. Someone's got to be the fall guy. It won't be the president, right? I'd be watching for General Milley to step aside. He was the figure that had the comprehensive, cohesive plan that Trump left behind. And then he's the guy that executes the lack of a plan here. I think he becomes the first person that pressure says should resign or step aside or fall. We should watch for that. And there's no sign of it happening today, but somebody's going to have that responsibility. And he's the most interesting person because he came with a plan and then he executed without one. And I think that's going to be it. Watch these senators in the Democratic states that have elections next year or in purple states. They are sounding almost like Republicans in their criticism of Biden. We've got an election next year, and I don't think these Democrats who are trying to save their seats want to carry the stain of Joe Biden's bad decision here. So some Democrats are beginning to move away from the president for the first time.
Are we going to have hearings on this, John?
Yes. Three separate Democratic Senate committee chairmen, led by Bob Menendez, right in your backyard in New Jersey there, are promising hearings. The most amazing statement of anyone of a Democrat was Seth Moulton yesterday. He's a Democrat from Massachusetts. He used the sharpest language possible to condemn President Biden and his failure and said, listen, you got to just move. You got to stop making excuses. Do something. He's a guy that spent four tours in Iraq, so he knows something about warfare. When a Democrat from Massachusetts is criticizing your Democratic president, you know you've made a faux pas.
Merkel had it right. This was a politically driven exodus. It polled well, and we'll get out by 9/11, a good soundbite, and that's not the way you should conduct your foreign policy, especially a serious thing like that.
Who's now being recognized by our enemies, Iran and China and Russia.
That's what happens when you do it for political purposes and you're not looking at the substance of the situation.
So, John Solomon, what do we do now?
Well, I think there's three stages of this, right? The first is, can they stabilize the country and get Americans out and our closest allies in the Afghan population do it safely? That's the mission at hand. That's weeks away. That isn't days away. There's a lot there. Then they've got to move very quickly to find out how quickly Al-Qaeda and terrorists are reconstituting in Afghanistan. That is a big fear. General Milley told that to folks the other day.
We're getting all those hurricane alerts. Or what are these? Tropical
storm
alerts.
I'm sitting out here in the beautiful weather getting hurricane alerts.
It's coming right at you, John. Coming right up the Atlantic.
I might come back early to New York.
Listen, I'm on my way out to join you, John. We have a breakfast tomorrow.
Well, maybe after breakfast we should go home. We'll see.
That's a negotiation with my wife, which I hope I win.
I'm sheltering in place here in New York, John.
Well, John Solomon, thank you for coming on, and we got to talk more often, and because we got to stand up for the truth. Somebody has to stand up for the truth. And thank you, John Solomon. Have a great weekend, and we hope we survive.
Be safe up there.
Thank you.
Exploring the truth, telling both sides with common sense thinking. Here's John Katsimatidis on Talk Radio 77 WABC. This is the Cats Roundtable.
And we have with us Dr. Peter Mihalos, Dr. Dr. Peter at WABCRadio.com. And
Dr. Peter, give us an update. What the heck is going on?
And a lot is going on. Unfortunately, 2,000 people are in the hospital in the New York City area. 13 people died yesterday of COVID.
Wow.
We have 100,000 new cases a day in the United States, with 500 deaths a day on track this month of August, and 14,000 people estimated to die in August alone. 97% of the people hospitalized are unvaccinated, and 99% of the deaths are in unvaccinated. We're going to talk about boosters, because now we're heading for variant-specific boosters are coming against the Delta and the Lambda variant. Just like we have to change the flu vaccine annually, we're going to have to change the booster vaccine. And the list of people who now can get it are people over 65. Most importantly, the long-term care facility people who suffered the most can get it. Immune-compromised people like cancer patients, organ transplant patients who are on rejection drugs, HIV-AIDS patients, and people who are 16 to 64 with risk factors like obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, and also get shots. And what we need to do here on WABC is explain to people that this has been the largest human clinical trial of vaccine in history. In less than a year, we've got 250 million people have gotten the vaccine. And like other vaccines, 1 in 1 million might have a problem. But the bottom line is that it works and it prevents death. And people say, oh, it's not approved. Well, no, it's EUA is just so that you can't sue the vaccine makers for side effects. So they want to stay under emergency use authorization, and you can't sue employers for mandating it, and you can't sue the FDA. That was the deal that they had to make. It's called the PrEP Act, in order to get the vaccine companies to start making vaccines again.
Doctor, if some people are scared to get the new type of vaccine, which is the Pfizer and Moderna, what do you call it,
mRNA-based
vaccine, then why don't they just get the Johnson vaccine, which is an ordinary vaccine like every other vaccine we have?
Yeah, well, it's the difference is that the way it's delivered in adenovirus. The good news is Time magazine covered it beautifully. In South Africa, 485,000 people got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and healthcare workers, and it showed it worked very well against the Delta variant. And it showed that 70% won't end up getting hospitalized, and 90% will protect you from dying, and that it was working fine against the Delta variant, because we hear constantly about the other vaccines, but we don't hear about the Johnson & Johnson, because it's only a $10 shot, and you only get it once, but it's actually done quite well. And the other great news is that the Regeneron antibody, developed right here by Columbia University-trained Regeneron scientists, it works against the Delta variant. And if you get diagnosed, get the antibody. It is available. All the hospitals have access to it. And the other good news is we have the molnupiravir oral antivirals, with the largest clinical trial in history of an oral antiviral being done in India, because we licensed it to them in May. That's why the death rate is coming down in our great ally, the great democracy of India. So that's coming our way, and that's great. We've also learned that antibody persists 8 months after you get infected and 6 to 8 months after a vaccine. And that's why we're talking about boosters now. And we're looking forward to having these variant-specific booster shots that they said that BioNTech and Pfizer said they can make them in 6 weeks. And then it's up to our FDA to approve them. And we need to explain to people the COVID risk complications. If you don't get vaccinated, the risk of long-haul COVID, the risk of the immunity wearing off, and the risk of variants. So please, tell people get vaccinated.
If you take the oral stuff like a Theraflu that's going to be available soon, and they took it in India, what do you think the percentage safety rate is? Not safety or
The studies show that if you get COVID and you're positive and you take 200 milligrams of molnupiravir twice a day in the preliminary studies in India for 5 days, just like you take Tamiflu, they showed the recovery and the death rate was dramatically reduced. And that's why it's so low now in India, because they are taking it and they're actually applying for emergency use authorization and getting it approved for them, because it's doing so well in the clinical trials. And I hope and pray any politicians listening or anyone with influence, please push the FDA to get an EUA for this medicine. And again, I have no proprietary interest. I'm not a stock person. I don't buy companies, but the science is showing that the oral antiviral works, and we need it sooner than later.
Thank you for calling in. We're out of time. Dr. Peter Mihalos, thank you for everything you've done for us. Do we have Larry Kudlow on yet?
We got Larry Kudlow.
Larry Kudlow, the roller coaster ride with the markets. what the heck is going on? What the, you know, we know we're in a big jam in Afghanistan, but maybe the investors are saying good riddance. What say you?
Well, look at the Afghan business is a catastrophic failure, but it's not going to bring the country down. It's not going to bring the economy down. It's not going to bring America down. We've been through worse, but it's a very difficult situation. And my only concern, the only link that I can find is that the Taliban is a terrorist operation. I don't know if they're going to become the government. They may well become the new government. We won't recognize them. Probably China and Russia will. The United States won't. The NATO countries won't recognize them. The worst part of the story is not only that the Taliban is taking over, but also the Taliban will harbor other terrorist groups. They've always harbored Al-Qaeda groups, either in Afghanistan and or Pakistan. So you don't know, you know, state-sponsored terrorism, who knows, they're going to come after us at some point. But we'll cross those bridges when we get to them. The rest of the story, look, the economy's fine. We're going to be growing at 6% for the next few quarters, I think. The stock market is still holding the high ground. We're at near record highs across the board. And a lot of the economic news continues to be strong. I'm particularly interested this past week. Industrial production was very strong. Manufacturing was very strong. Business capex, spending on equipment and technology is very strong. So I like that story. The next big thing at home is defeating the budget resolution and the so-called reconciliation bill, because that has the potential for excess spending, excess inflation, and high taxes, which will do great damage to the economy. I've always argued, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it's not broken, and they shouldn't fix it. And the fix that's being proposed by the Democrats, frankly, will make the patient worse. So I think the next big battle, and we're going to get some of this week, this coming week, is to see whether they can get a budget resolution passed, whether they can get the infrastructure bill passed. That has to be defeated, in my judgment. And that would be smooth sailing. My only point, John, to the stock market is the speculation about the Fed and the Federal Reserve conference in Jackson Hole next week, and whether they're going to announce some tapering of their portfolio purchases, which I think they should, by the way. I think we should start winding down the portfolio. And the market may have some temporary jitters, but it won't affect anything. It's the right thing to do. So I'm still pretty bullish about our story. It's unfortunate what's happened in Afghanistan, and it's unfortunate how Mr. Biden and his team has bungled this.
There's got to be some common sense. There's a lot of common sense Democrats that were scared of the extreme left, and they were bowing down. But I think at this point, they got to come to a reality that our country is in danger and America is under attack.
Well, I agree. You would think so, John. And I think there's some of that out there. I mean, look, President Biden's polls are heading down at a pretty rapid rate. Now, this is a function of Afghanistan, but even before this, you know, the last 6 or 7 days, even before then, his polls were dropping because folks don't want gigantic spending, particularly during an inflationary period like this, and they don't want all these taxes. I mean, small businesses are going to get slammed by the tax proposals, you know, and family-owned farms and ranches are going to get slammed if they start to tinker with the estate tax. And so I think there's already a backing away. The question is, how do the politics play out on the floor of the two houses? And I think it's going to be a tough battle. Afghanistan's not going to help that. But I think the battle will be joined mostly on the debate about the domestic economy. I mean, look, if you're growing, I mean, I've always said this, if you're growing the way we are and you have inflation risks, why do you want to launch another spending orgy? I mean, No one in their right mind believes that we desperately need another $6 trillion of spending. No one in their right mind believes that. And I think no one in their right mind believes you're going to tax your way into prosperity or you want to have some class warfare against successful individuals. I think they're barking up the wrong tree. And I think all this wokeism is running its course. I think the country is getting fed up with wokeism and critical race theory and, you know, discriminating in favor of one group versus another. I think this stuff is unpopular.
Larry, one more thing before we have to sign off. The important thing, inflation. And me and you have been going at it for a few months. Do you think it'll taper off? Now the price of crude oil is coming down a little bit. Will it taper off or will it not?
My hunch is we've seen the worst of it. That doesn't mean it's going away. But my hunch is we've seen the worst of it. You're right about oil, John. You're right. Natural gas has come off. Gold has come off. Silver has come off. Copper has come off. But, again, that's why I'd like to see the Fed tell people they're going to slow down or gradually end all their bond buying for their portfolio. Because that creates excess money, and that would finance the deficits, and that would be inflationary. So I think the next big hurdle this fall is going to be this so-called reconciliation bill and whether we're going to have another $6 trillion in spending. Left to its own devices, I think we've seen the worst of the inflation.
Well, thank you, Larry Kudlow. And most important thing, from on behalf of WABC and all its staff, happy birthday to you, and God bless you.
Thank you, John. Thanks to WABC. Thanks to Margo. Thanks to everybody. I love everybody. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Cats Roundtable every Sunday morning. We'll bring you the latest in what's happening in our community, our country, and the world. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Have a nice Sunday.